Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this week's edition of The Advisors on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, designed to bring you quality information, resources, and advice to keep your business moving in the right direction. Now here's your host, Pamela Muldoon.
Welcome once again to this edition of the Blog Talk Radio's version of the Next Stage Business Radio Network. And of course, this Friday show is of the advisors. I'm really excited for today, as I am with every week. This is quite a little project we're taking on, and our hope, as always, is to bring you, people in business, a wonderful group of resources, information, some really talented folks that can help you drive your business and provide some information that will hopefully guide you or possibly help you if you've made some mistakes, which we all have. So before we kick it off again, I just want to remind everybody of all the ways that you can connect with us. Of course, we are always on our website, nextstagebusinessradio.com. You can definitely check out all of the advisors, their information for the advisor show, as well as our collaborative partners. And we will be doing a future show just discussing the collaborative model that the Next Stage Business Radio Network is so proud to be a part of. We're also on Facebook. We have a fan page, so it's facebook.com/NSB Radio Network. Twitter, same thing, @NSB Radio Network. And we have an iTunes channel. So if you are connected to iTunes through your iPhone, iPod, or any other means, just make sure that you search Next Stage Business, subscribe to this channel, and we'll pop right into your podcast so that you can take us with you. We try to be as consumer-friendly as possible. So let's get the show on the road. Again, this is the third edition of The Advisors, our weekly show that we've launched here on the Next Stage Business Radio Network. And I'm excited to have two advisors on our team today. Today we have our legal advisor as well as our financial planner advisor, because we are talking about the very important topic of planning your exit strategy. And of course, we're going to talk, anytime is a good time, but we're also going to talk about why it's important at the startup phase. So once again, I want to welcome Jeff O'Brien. He is the business attorney with Mansfield, Panic & Cohen. And Jeff, are you with us live today?
I am.
Excellent. Good morning. How are you today? It's morning here in Minnesota. So I, you know, of course, we're on the internet, so we can be heard all over the world. So who knows who's listening, right? But welcome to the show once again. You were on a couple of weeks ago discussing some of the where's, why's, and how's of basic legal, and we're excited to have you today talking about business succession planning. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And, of course, your partner in crime or partner in helping people is our financial planner advisor, and he is Todd Terhorst. He is the managing partner, president, and, of course, financial planner advisor for our show as well as his company, Diversified Wealth Management. Welcome to the show, Todd.
Thank you very much, Pamela. If we're partners in crime, at least I have an attorney who's a partner.
That's right. I know, I'm saying this, and I'm like, that's probably not the best way to put it, is it, Todd?
More like partners in avoiding crime.
That's so true, and we've had a great conversation with Jeff in the past about ways that you need to be getting your, you know, I's dotted and T's crossed so you don't have a legal issue. So this is going to be a good conversation. Before we dive in, we've had a chance to connect with Jeff a little bit, and Jeff, we're going to come back to you and give you a chance to just, you know, kind of reacquaint yourself with the audience. But Todd, as your first show here on the Next Stage Business Radio Network, just give us a little bit of information about Diversified Wealth Management, what you do best, and the clients that are best served by you. Just share a little bit about yourself and your background, if you would.
Sure, be happy to. Diversified Wealth Management is an independent financial services firm. So we're a firm that offers first and foremost advice and planning to clients rather than selling them a product or having a specific lineup of investments ready to go for recommending to people. So as an independent firm, we start with more of a comprehensive financial planning approach. We help people dig into every single area of their financial life, which could range from, obviously, investments is what usually comes up as a lead-in, but certainly we get into everything ranging from their benefits at work, their tax planning, their estate planning, their budgeting, cash flow issues, short-term cash management, you name it. And in doing so, I think it puts us in a position to give better advice. And so we work with most clients on a fee basis and instead of, again, on a commission basis. And we work with a very wide range of people. We work with a lot of small business owners. We work with a lot of individuals as well, everywhere from just a young couple planning, starting out with a young family, to people either preparing for retirement or early stages into retirement, making sure we do income planning and other things like that. So we're a very diverse group. We've got 13 advisors here in the Twin Cities that are part of our group. And thankfully, we've been in business now. It'll be 8 years coming up, and we're very excited. Our firm is growing, and we're able to get out and see more clients and work with more business owners.
Excellent, excellent. And it's great to hear that you are growing. You know, you guys probably have read the news this week as I did that. Did you know the recession was over in 2009? Didn't realize that. So
I didn't get that memo.
I didn't get that memo either, but we finally got it on our emails, Facebook, Twitter, and the news this week. So, but it's so great to have you part of the team, Todd, because as our financial planner advisor and really truly a financial advisor, not only for business owners, and we'll talk about a little bit because we're talking about the succession plan. We're going to talk today how not only you, Todd, but also yourself, Jeff, how the both of you bleed that into the personal relationships of your business owners, that it you know, what we do in our business is not an island. It affects, and the reason we do what we do is usually because of our families or because we're creating wealth or a legacy. So I want to make sure that we're addressing both sides today, which would be very natural. And so let's get this kicked off. And so let's start at the beginning, guys, because that's, as you well know, you guys know me pretty well. I like to start at the beginning and really get a sense of what does, because business succession planning, those are three words that are kind of catchwords in both of your industries. But what does that really mean? Why should I, as a business owner, even be considering, whether it's at the startup phase, you know, a few years in, talking about planning for the end of my business? Todd,
well,
why don't you go? I'm sorry.
I'll chime in here. You know, this kind of dovetails off. We talked about the last time I was on the show in terms of some of the common mistakes that business owners make, and this is probably right up there in not planning for the succession plan, not planning for the exit strategy from the business. And this is one of those where the attorney alone is not the only advisor you need. This is one that Todd and I have to work on together. We probably have to have Pam Ricker as the CPA being involved in that discussion as well. And that discussion has to happen from the outset. But what succession planning is basically the exit strategy. It's, you know, at some point, even if a business owner starts a business up and they want to run it until the end of their life, there has to be a plan in place, or there has to be something done with the business, at the end of the owner's life. If that's the route.
Yeah, I agree. And part of the discussion we have at our firm with every client, you know, everyone we talk to wants to retire, and part of, you know, think of retirement as a succession plan for every single person. How do I end my career and move on to the next phase, which is obviously not working and being in a position where you can be retired and enjoy an income? And for small business owners, that always includes what do I do with my business? How do I sell it or pass it on or fold it up or make a decision as to how this whole process in my career is going to come to an end? And sometimes it's hard for, you know, someone who's quite young to want to think that far ahead or plan that far ahead, but there are still things that Jeff and I and the other advisors that would be part of that discussion can help them be thinking about from the onset.
Well, and you're bringing up some really interesting, very specific points that, guys, I definitely want to make sure we address. And that is, you know, some of it is partly based on the age that you start this. You're definitely going to come in from a different angle, whether you're a 20-something or a 50-something or possibly even older. But then the other piece to that is that this is just one time that we as business owners are going to connect with the two of you. This is an ongoing process because we all know that our lives are very fluid. We're going to change. Family events take place. We may move. We may grow our business. We may not grow the business, you know, all those different elements. So we're going to talk through that process. And let's start, you know, with the exit strategy. You mentioned, Todd, for a younger business owner, it's just a hard discussion to have. You know, we're pretty invincible when we're probably just coming out of those college years and into or starting a business at a young age. And, you know, I think we all either know someone or related to someone in this age group. So let's start at the beginning. We're sitting down with the two of you, and we don't have or we can't see that vision of 20, 30, 40, 50 years out. What are some really great questions that we should either be asking you, Todd, as our financial planner advisor, or some questions that you're going to ask about them and where they want to be? Why don't we start there?
Well, oftentimes, one of the first questions that I'll ask when it's a when a small business owner walks in is, you know, tell me about what your growth plans are for your business. Most people who start a business would like to grow it. Not all, but some.
Right.
And are you going to take on partners? Are you going to, you already have partners? Is it going to be a family business down the road? And again, 25, 30-year-old people who are starting a business probably maybe have started a family but don't know that their kids minor may or may not end up as part of the business. Or we'll ask them many times, is it your objective to grow this business and stay involved with this business throughout your career? Oftentimes it's not. Someone will start a business with the intention of getting it up and running and growing it to a certain point and then trying to sell it. And so all of those questions are going to lead us, Jeff and I and anyone else that's involved, to trying to frame how we would approach that succession planning or that exit strategy and how we would start the conversation from there.
Excellent. And for yourself, Jeff, are there some questions, I'm sure there are some similar questions you're asking that Todd is bringing to the table, but from that entity perspective, as you're setting up the entity, for example, are there some specific things that you need to be asking in terms of future that are going to help decide how you're going to dive into this from the beginning?
Well, I ask any of my clients, you know, and I work with a lot of brand new businesses with our incubation center, and, you know, this comes up in the discussion about the business plan, and part of what I tell my clients is your business plan has to include your exit strategy, because that does drive, in some cases, what type of entity we're going to use. You know, there's different types of corporations that have, you know, a C corporation versus an S corporation that have different tax consequences, and to change from one to the other, from a C to an S, there's a 10-year period that has to go through to avoid some of the adverse tax consequences of a C. That's just one example where, you know, we have to start that process 10 years out in order to make it work. So, you know, it all kind of ties together, but they have to, you know, be thinking about it. And I kind of focus on more of the bigger picture of where, what is the strategy? What do you see as the exit? Is this a business that you're going to want to pass off to your children? Do you have partners in the business that you're going to sell, that you want to sell out to, or have some mechanisms in place for when one partner passes away, that the other partner can buy them, you know, buy their interest? Are you going to sell this to your employees? Are you going to sell this to someone else through an asset sale or a stock sale? So that's the biggest concern from the legal perspective, is what tools am I going to be looking to use down the road in order to get the person out of it. And that all, and like I said, that all comes into starting it. That conversation starts on day one with the business plan.
Excellent. And this is a really nice way to segue into those different examples of how you can exit. And, of course, you guys both have already addressed other advisors that need to be at the table. So, of course, we have our financial planner and our business attorney, but you've also addressed your accountant or CPA should be a part of this initial discussion. Of course, here on the advisor show is Pam Ricker of Ricker & Associates. Are there any other advisors just off the top of your heads, and maybe it's a specific situation that I should be putting on my list in the first conversations of succession planning?
Yeah, if your business attorney doesn't also do wills and trusts. Now, with our firm, myself and another one of my partners, we both do both, okay? So we can handle the estate planning issues that come up just as well as the business transaction. But if you're working with someone who isn't situated that way, then you have to have both a business attorney and an estate planning attorney on your team to help advise. Because, you know, one of the things that I point out to my clients when I, you know, the first day I'm meeting with them and I'm asking them, do they have a financial advisor, and trying the, you know, and introducing them to Todd, you know, I get the head scratching. I'm like, well, why am I going to see me a financial advisor for starting a business. I said, 99.9% of the time, you're not gonna sell your business for what you need to live on for the rest of your life. That's why you got to call a guy like Terhorst to diversify your investments so that you, and including sale proceeds if you sell it, in order to live on it for the rest of your life.
Exactly. And Todd, that's actually great. You know, Jeff brings up such a valid point that you need to be there at the beginning because you're going to help them grow some of that wealth. And so you need to really look at what their bottom line is from the very beginning so you can get that bottom line a little higher throughout the time of the business.
That's right. And oftentimes it's very difficult, especially with smaller businesses, for them to see that far ahead or to really be able to make any real accurate assumptions, but that doesn't mean you don't discuss it. You know, I have a really good example of a gentleman who has been a client of mine for years. He owned a small retail-type operation, and it was a family business. He didn't have children to pass it to that were interested in having it passed to them, I should say. And he struggled for, I bet, the last 5 or 6 years trying to figure out how am I going to get my business to a position where I can either sell it to another interested party, which is probably the most difficult thing to do, or to find someone within my organization who knows my business, knows how things operate, and it's certainly probably more valuable to someone who you kind of grow within the organization for a period of time. And he finally found a younger person of comparable skills to his, and it is now finally 2 or 3 years after that he's finally able to start getting down to the nitty-gritty of exactly how he's going to do it. But it doesn't mean that from the get-go we haven't been talking about the various strategies that we would use to exit his business, how that would factor into his retirement and for he and his wife, how it factors into his estate plan, which has to be addressed, as Jeff mentioned, right from the get-go. And that's just an example of someone who really kind of has sole ownership of his business. And you talk about people who already have existing partners or start a business with a partner or several partners. The issue of estate planning and buy-sell agreements and succession planning right from the get-go becomes even more important, as Jeff can probably go into.
Excellent. So let's start to dive into some of these very specific scenarios. Jeff, you had started to address a couple of those. And I think one that is pretty obvious to most of us in business, especially, of course, if we're in the situation, is, at the end of the business, am I passing it to a family member? Or maybe it's already a family-owned business, and how are you going to move that forward? So let's talk about that for a little bit, the passing to a family member. What are some things that, you know, if I'm in my 30s, 40s, and I'm thinking I want to grow this business for my child, or if I'm a little later in years and I have a son or a daughter that needs to take it over, what are some of the conversations that need to start happening?
Well, some of what has to happen, this is something that largely gets addressed through an estate plan, okay? And I always talk to, and I've had situations with clients who were the kids working in the business, right? And the parents didn't take the time to put together an estate plan, so they're left to a set of basically default rules, the state's estate plan, as we say, called the intestate laws that they're in the statutes that dictate who gets what. And you know, someone who's been working in the business, putting their time and sweat equity into the business with the expectation that someday it's going to be theirs, that's a rude awakening when they find out that that's not the case and they're out trying to buy it back from, you know, the estate and having to take out a loan and everything. That can be a real kick in the pants. So the key really, the first point is to, if it's going to be left to a child or children, the business owner needs to get in to see their attorney to do a will and possibly a trust to make sure that the ownership interest in that entity, whether it be a limited liability company or a corporation, pass to the appropriate children on that person's death. That's the first step. The second step may be, you know, then you get into the issues of, okay, well, let's say I've got 3 kids and only one of them is going to work in the business. What do I do with the other two? Then you may jump to the to the you know, putting some a buy sell in place with some life insurance, so that on each other, so that the you know, maybe the son, it's a father son team, son has a life insurance policy on dad's life, dad dies, son gets the proceeds, but then pays them to dad's estate to get the business, and maybe in the estate plan, the other kids get those life insurance proceeds. So there's a lot of different things, a lot of moving parts there. It's not just about getting the ownership into the appropriate hands, but it's also usually you've got the whole fairness thing. You know, everybody wants, nobody wants to show favorites, so you got to, there's an equalization measure that usually take place as well.
Well, and to that end as well, Jeff and Todd, feel free to definitely dive in from the financial planning perspective, but in some situations, not all the children even want to participate in this process, or maybe there's just one or two, and so you've really got to sit down and map out some of these emotional repercussions and where everyone's really at the table, I would think.
That and the fact that a lot of times what we see is whether it's father-son, daughter-father, you know, daughter-mother, the parent, in many cases, has a hard time, let's just say, letting go. And
sure.
So without some kind of a strategy put in place that builds over time so that they're both thinking of the same end goal in mind, it's hard for sometimes for them to just turn it over. And one of the other difficult parts with a family business is that oftentimes the parent in this scenario is depending upon or is going to be dependent upon income from the proceeds of the business or from the sale of the business for their retirement. And
okay.
So they want to be fair. They want to give the business, in essence, over to their child at a reasonable cost, you might say. But at the same time, they want to maximize as much as they can from the business for their retirement. So it puts them in a very awkward, in some cases, awkward position of trying to come up with something that's right in between. And oftentimes the child who's in, or in many cases we start the relationship with the child or we might start the relationship with the parent, and they're both going to view things a little bit differently. Their capabilities of taking over the business or their ability to maintain the growth of the business, and sometimes there's a disconnect there. And so it's, you do have some emotional and family issues that you have to get past. But again, it comes down to starting that process as soon as you can so that everyone's expectations are clear.
Well, and this, you know, it's really interesting. Of course, we're focusing specifically on passing to a family member, which has its own specific emotions. But I think regardless of whether it's a family member or a non-family member that you want to sell the business to, it sounds like there should also be another advisor or two at the table, someone who really works in the development part of an organization, someone that actually can help with some of those organizational pieces, how you have the company, not just structured from an entity perspective, Jeff, like you do from the legal side, but perhaps someone who has some of those people elements, you know, the team and the leadership and management pieces. So have you guys also connected or worked with those types of advisors that specialize in the exit strategy of a company?
I have several times. Yeah, definitely. And it's oftentimes it helps for one primary reason is because you have someone involved who's maybe less emotional about the issue, but also understands and can moderate between the two, you know, the father, the son, or the mother and the daughter, whoever it happens to be, and gets involved to the level that they understand where those emotional issues are coming in. And, you know, as much as we try as professionals to get involved and to be at that level, sometimes having that extra third party in there makes a big difference.
Excellent. Yeah. Jeff, you were going to expand on that as well?
Yeah, I would concur with what Todd says. You know, there, you know, for some of my clients, you know, that the operations piece is kind of, and the administrative side of running a business is really sometimes underestimated. That's, you know, a lot of people, I always say that part of what we do here, but in building out a team of advisors for our clients, is, you know, have the business owner do what they do best and let the advisors do the rest. Because, you know, doing what, you know, being a good auto mechanic or being a good photographer or being a good, you know, hairstylist is one thing, but having that business acumen, that operation savvy, that administrative acumen is really key. And for some business owners, they don't have that, and so you have to supplement that with a coach or a consultant or somebody that can be that, that leg of the stool, as I say, to make sure that the business doesn't steer onto the to the rocks as it goes through its life.
Well, and that's an interesting part of this process. I don't, and again, it doesn't have to be a family member for this to be an issue. It could be a, definitely a non-family member because either, you know, Todd, you mentioned that as part of the financial planning process, the owner or the intention is to have the owner paid throughout his or her retirement, whatever that looks like. They may be starting another business or they may be, you know, doing some philanthropy, whatever that is. So we want to set the business up to be able to financially support the owner, even if he or she is not there. But then, of course, there's all those repercussions of bringing in a new CEO, a new set of managers sometimes, you know, all those different moving parts, and now another new set of decision makers. And so when there is that transition, are you in your specific roles, and Todd, I'll talk to you first, are you at the table then with both of those CEOs, the old one and the new one, to talk about that process? Because you're also working with the financial information in many cases of the employees as well.
Right. Well, it really varies, Pamela. If it's a real small business, usually, as you know, the owner is the CFO, the CEO, the CMO, the owners kind of operate the business from every different perspective. But if it's a large enough business where there's a team of people in there already, you know, the chief financial officer, if they have a head of accounting, or if the business is large enough, hopefully those people are key enough and have been involved with the family business long enough that they become part of that discussion, and that the transition from one owner to the next, especially with family businesses, can be seamless or hopefully seamless from that perspective. I think where you get into, you know, we get into issues where you have to bring in a new team is when you're probably more likely when you're transitioning maybe a buyout scenario where you've got one company who's looking at another company and their exit from their company is to sell it. And now they have key people in their organization that may or may not end up staying on depending upon the new ownership's structure and what they have available and how similar those companies are in the way they approach things. And that brings up an entirely new dynamic. And in those cases, you're definitely going to have a larger team of advisors involved because the numbers have to work as far as who's being employed, who's staying on, and definitely you're going to have an accountant, oftentimes a consultant coming in that might be specific to the industry. And in those scenarios, we try, from our perspective, to be involved as much as possible, but oftentimes it leads, because you've got another company coming in with their own team of advisors, it oftentimes leads to kind of everyone trying to figure out what is their role going to be.
Yeah, so now you've got not just you as a, you, say you and Jeff are with a business owner doing your thing, but now the other business, if there is a sales situation, has their team as well. So now we've added more, you know, and more can be great, but it can also just cause a little more challenges, a little more problems to the situation getting to the end result.
Yes, it can.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned something about key people in the organization. Now, it's my understanding that there are certain things on both sides, the legal side and the financial side, when there are key people in your organization that you either need protected or contracts put in place. So let's talk a little bit about some of those key person issues that do come to the table. Why don't you go ahead, Todd, and share some things from the financial side?
Well, a lot of times there's a couple of key people. Maybe they're a key salesperson. Maybe they're the financial person at the company if it's not the business owner. Maybe it's you know, a combination of various roles. And oftentimes, and this just came up in a client case that I was working on here within the last few months, the partners of the firm, one was older, was transitioning out. They had a buy-sell agreement in place, thankfully. They had it mapped out. Everything was moving smoothly. But that owner who was transitioning out had a certain way she wanted to leave the business with certain people in place. The partner taking over the main reins wanted to make some changes. And so the perspective of who those key people were in this particular case was much different. And so it comes up often when you're transitioning a business from one owner to the next that the makeup of the business, the people involved with the business are going to – sometimes there's going to be a change there. And, Jeff can comment more on how you, deal with those from a legal perspective. But, it's a personal dynamic that is very difficult to work around unless you talk about it ahead of time.
Jeff, do you want to expand on that?
Yeah, this issue usually rears its head when it comes to the another way of creating a succession plan, which is a sale to a third party, whether it be a stock sale or an asset sale. Most often is a sale of the business assets to an outside party. We can talk about that another time why we do it that way, but. The issue of the key salesperson or the existing owner staying on with the business. Now, for example, right now we're working with a client that is looking to purchase an ongoing business, and part of the discussion is one of the current owners staying involved for a period of time after the sale. You have customers, you have relationships. And the current owner has the goodwill built up with those customers, with those vendors, whomever, and it's always helpful to have the selling owner stay involved for sometimes up to a year or two as a consultant or an employee or what have you, keeping those relationships going. If the person is staying around for, let's say, a period of time as, say, an employee, that brings up some of the issues that Todd mentioned. When you've got other employees there that are, the lower level employees, and the former owner is now just an employee, that's kind of a weird dynamic, and you have to deal with it. But oftentimes there's legitimate business reasons why the previous owner needs to stay involved for a period of time to make sure that the business keeps going. I mean, when someone buys a business, they're looking at the revenues of the business, the income stream, and keeping the selling owner around to make sure that income stream stays as it is. And the revenues keep flowing in is a very crucial point. So, and then that gets into issues with, say, non-compete agreements and things like that when you get into your sales staff. Those are discussions you could say spend a whole hour on those. But there's a lot of different moving parts when it comes to the personnel inside the company. But like I said, that's most oftentimes comes up when you're dealing with the sale to an outsider.
I would add to that, Pamela, that
go ahead. Yep. Go ahead, Todd.
With smaller businesses that maybe it's just one key person being the owner, and maybe they have administrative staff, or we're talking about micro business scenarios. That's why it's much more difficult for them to sell that business outright, whether it's a stock sale or an asset sale, as Jeff mentioned, because they are the business. Oftentimes, without them involved, it's unlikely that the revenue will continue to the same extent that it has. So it becomes probably even more important that there's some kind of a scenario where they are involved. There's a time period. Sometimes it's even longer than a year or two. When it's a service-oriented business where there's a key person, especially if they're in some kind of an advisory role. I even use my own industry as an example. If someone's built a relationship over 20 years with someone and all of a sudden they say, I'm selling my business to Joe Schmo, their clients are going to be a little bit thrown off. Whereas if they say, I'm introducing this person to my firm, we're going to be working together for a period of time, and they get to know that person, the transition and the revenue is much more likely to stay intact.
Yeah. Well, this is really an interesting part of the process because I'm glad that you're bringing up different sized businesses as you walk through this because, our audience, it's interesting. You mentioned micro businesses, which, Here in the state of Minnesota, microbusiness, just for the audience to connect with, is considered 10 employees or less. And throughout the country, that number kind of fluctuates. It can be 30 employees or less in some states. But for just general definition, we'll just kind of give it that, you know, 20 to 30 employee or less crowd, but especially the service businesses. Guys, this is so important to sit down with a financial planner and a legal advisor to really even have this discussion, even if you think you're not equipped or it doesn't apply to you, because at the end of the day, it really, really does. And that kind of goes to one of the things I wanted to talk about. Again, different scenarios for different people, but the value of your business, whether you're passing it on to a family member or selling it to a third party, my guess is that when there's a sale going on, I, as a business owner, am probably thinking my business is worth more than what it sometimes is valued for. That's just a guess. Anyone have to take?
Yeah, I mean, a buyer is not going to pay a seller what the seller needs or wants for the business. They're going to pay what the business is worth. And this is one of the, you know, we talk about our advisors here, and we've mentioned the CPA a couple times. This is why you have a CPA at the outset, along with the financial advisor, along with the attorney, because you need to have a CPA keeping good financial records for you, doing, you know, financial statements, getting the help that the business owner needs if they're keeping, you know, transactions on QuickBooks. If your financials are a mess when you go to sell the business, I mean, this is largely when it comes to, I mean, this can come up in mainly in the sale to a third party, but also in trying to value the company for a buy-sell agreement. If you aren't working with good numbers, that's going to make things difficult. So why you have to have that accountant on your team that can crunch the numbers and keep good books for you, so you know exactly what your business is worth at any point in time.
Well, and to that effect, you know, it's interesting, and I know, Todd, that you're on the financial side. The financial conversation is one of probably the most emotional conversations that any of us, whether it's individual, you know, personal or business, are having. Money is a very emotional topic. And then when you start putting years of experience, growth, you put blood, sweat, and tears into a business, this is really, it's a tough call, but the numbers don't lie, right? Like what Jeff is referring to, the numbers don't lie, and it really is maybe the most emotional time of your life, but really is an unemotional process when it's down on paper.
It is, and again, as Jeff mentioned, it really comes to fruition when you're selling to a third party. You're going to basically be giving up everything that you've developed over the course of your career. And in some cases, it's not emotional. That's the whole point of why you started the business, and that was the end goal. In many cases, it's not. It's something that is very personal to you. And so you're absolutely right. We try, when we're talking about how the business is going to play into their financial plan or their retirement or their estate plan or whatever it is, we try to keep them focused on the realities of this is what you have to keep your mind on. And whether it's a third party coming in to do evaluation, or it's your accountant and your attorney helping you to identify what the numbers say, it's almost every single case that I've ever been involved with where there is going to be a disconnect. And they don't understand oftentimes, well, why wouldn't we factor this in and why wouldn't we factor that in? And what I try to do is say, think about it in terms of buying Google or Apple or some other stock. What are you really buying when you're buying a company? And as Jeff mentioned, what you're buying is you're buying revenue. And so there's going to be some factoring of what is the likelihood that the continued revenue of this business is going to continue at the same level or maybe less if the owner isn't involved anymore. And so what you're purchasing is you're purchasing an income stream. And so that is absolutely what you have to keep them focused on. And you're right. Oftentimes it's very difficult.
Well, and you bring up a great analogy. I actually was just reading a great article in Fast Company yesterday about Steve Jobs and just 10 things we can learn about that particular business and any of our businesses. And what a great example of if the CEO, and he has left and come back, right? So what a great example of a CEO affecting the price of your company. and having a key person involved. And we all kind of need to be the Steve Jobs of our company when we're growing it, right?
Yeah. Same thing with Bill Gates. And every company who's identified by a leader of any kind. I mean, I think if a lot of companies out there that we've all heard of, if I asked you who the CEO of 3M is, most people couldn't tell me.
Right.
He's not a public figure. He's not identified as, you know, people don't buy 3M products because he's the CEO. They don't necessarily have any, he doesn't have any goodwill attached to his name in the value of that company. But in your example, you're absolutely right. Steve Jobs was and is Apple, always had been and always probably will be thought of as the guy from Apple.
Yes.
Built, founded it. So same thing with someone who owns the laundromat down the street. You know, customers know who that person is. They talk to them when they come into the store. They have gotten to know them. Maybe that's not the perfect example, but it still plays into how that business is going to be valued.
Well, and I think even now to come back to the startup phase or when I'm sitting down for the first time with you two, is that you're going to be asking me questions about how I'm going to grow the exposure of my business, how am I going to market my business, what are the key things that over the next 3, 5, 10 years that will be important to the growth of the business. And, of course, if key people are a part of that, you're going to want to have that conversation as early as possible. So I think this is hopefully giving some folks here on our listening audience a chance to take some notes on some really great questions to ask the attorney, the financial advisor, or especially just to ask themselves. These are things I need to be considering, even if I don't think I'm selling this business or leaving this business for 10, 15, 20 years. Let's have the conversation today. But you guys have both mentioned something a couple of times that I just want to break down a little bit, if you guys are willing, and that is the buy-sell agreement. So why don't we start with the legal side of that, Jeff? Tell us, okay, what exactly is a buy-sell agreement, and what are some components to that?
A buy-sell agreement, I call it a business prenuptial agreement. And it could be an agreement on its own, or it could be buried in a partnership agreement or a member control agreement for an LLC or a shareholder control agreement for a corporation. And what it is it's a series of provisions that provide for certain triggers that if these events happen, it gives rights to others, could be the company or the other owners, to buy out an owner. Okay? So, you know, there's lots of different triggering events that come up, voluntary sale, an involuntary transfer, like say someone files bankruptcy or has a creditor, you know, get a judgment against them, could be disability, could be a lot of different things. But when the succession planning context, the triggering event we focus on is the death of an owner. And there, there's lots of different ways you can do it. You can provide for the other owners to have the option to buy that person out, and if they don't exercise it, the person, whoever the person leaves that ownership interest to in a will, or whoever that interest passes to, becomes an owner of the company. That's a conversation that has to be had at the outset. Who are you wanting to do business with? Do you want to do business with someone's kids, with their widow, you know, with their ex-wife or ex-husband? You know, that's a discussion that has to be held at the outset, because that's when we draft those agreements, not when the person's already deceased. That's too late. There's also a method of doing it where it's a mandatory purchase, and the owners have life insurance policies on each other. And when someone dies, it goes back to the valuation question, having the company valued sufficiently, because there's usually valuation provisions within the buy-sell provisions and a process for, you know, what the terms are of the payment, that all are specified within the agreement. I joke with my clients saying, you know, we attorneys have a dark view of humanity. We assume you can't even agree on the person who would do the valuation. So we even have a mechanism, they call it the dueling appraisers method, to actually get to somebody that would actually value the business and that determination would be binding. But this is another succession plan, you know, selling it to your partners through the operation of a buy-sell agreement.
That's so funny, because really that's, you know, as our business attorney and legal advisor, you have to be a little more cynical than, say, the owner in this process, right?
Yeah, now you know where I get it from.
Well, I've got a I've got a really business, Pamela. I've worked with some clients. There's four partners of this firm. They're a very small group. The four partners, maybe two other employees and one administrative person. On paper, two of them owned the company. By handshake, four of them owned the company.
Aha.
Nope, not one of them had any idea what their buy-sell agreement, if they had even had one, had said back when they did it 10 years ago. And so when I walked into that scenario, I started asking questions. And it brought up a number of things, but the thing it really drove home is that the two gentlemen, or the two quote-unquote partners who were a handshake partner, had absolutely no protection whatsoever that if something were to happen to them on paper, they owned nothing. They would have gotten nothing. Their heirs would have gotten nothing. Their spouse would have been left out in the cold. The two gentlemen who were on paper the owners had done a buy-sell agreement 10 years ago with, at that time, a third partner who on paper at the time had owned it. And the buy-sell agreement still said that that person would basically get a third of the company. So the whole thing was just a mess.
Yeah.
So we just had to walk them through, get to a point where they could start to, you know, discuss how is the partnership going to be set up? How are we going to get it laid out with someone like Jeff to put it on paper and get a partnership agreement or a buy-sell agreement put together? And let's make sure from an individual planning perspective for each of them individually that we could factor now into their retirement plan what was going to happen as they get to the end of their business, because they were all basically the same age too. So they all were arguing essentially over how are we going to allow people to make the determination to retire if we're all roughly the same age? How are we going to decide who gets to leave first and what we have to pay that person when they leave, and how much revenue is going to be missing? And, you know, some scenarios between all the moving parts, as Jeff has said, it can be somewhat complicated, but you just walk them through, you help them make the decisions, and then Jeff and I can do our jobs.
Well, and you're also bringing up another interesting point to this discussion, Todd, which is we're kind of talking about a one-time, well, I guess I shouldn't say one-time sit-down, but we're just kind of talking about one meeting of many meetings that are probably happening or should be happening throughout the life of the business. Again, one of the reasons, and this is for our listeners there, why we want you to have this discussion as early in your business as possible. So one of the things I know both of you do really well and have developed in your firms is at a bare minimum, an annual review or some kind of a review, so that as the company shifts, because in your scenario, Todd, there are four here at the end of the life of the business that need to have that discussion, but it could have started out as two, and then 5 years they added another, and then, you know, at year 10 they added their fourth person, and you needed to be having these discussions throughout.
Absolutely. I mean, God forbid if something had happened. Certainly death is the most immediate and obvious issue that could have come up, but as Jeff mentioned, a disability, a divorce, some kind of creditor or bankruptcy filing. If you're not following through and checking in and updating, even if it's just a short discussion, you know, nothing's changed. Is everything else okay? Do we need to talk to anybody else? If you're not having that discussion on a fairly regular basis, and I don't think there's any magic time frame, but annually seems to be a kind of a minimum, you're likely, or you can put yourself in a position where something's changed, you didn't catch it, and now you got yourself in trouble. The other thing I would mention, and Jeff can comment on this more, is that the law has changed. The tax law has changed. The estate planning law has changed. Different types of legal precedents get set, and so if you're not talking to your team of advisors on a somewhat regular basis, you just run the risk that something's going to get missed.
And Jeff, can you expand on that? I mean, obviously,
I would concur with that, and I would give an example right now. Todd mentioned about the laws changing. You know, right now, we're operating in a year where there's no federal estate tax, and come January 1 of 2011, it goes back. There is a estate tax again, and the exemption amount goes back to what it was in 2001. And unless the Congress does something about that, That's just the way it's going to be. Now, that puts an onus on us, not only with our business clients that have estate plans, but all our estate planning clients. As a law firm, we're, you know, that's a big enough change where we're going to have to get some notices out there. But, you know, we don't put notices out for every, I mean, we have newsletters and things, but we don't notify, we can't notify every one of our clients every time a law changes and with advice as to their specific situation. All the reason, more reason why it's good to take the initiative to pick up the phone and call your lawyer, call your financial advisor. That's why we call and try to set those meetings up with you, you know, once a year, hopefully, and at least, and talk with you about what things are going on in your life, what things are going on in your finances, and how the current laws, the current climate affect you.
Well, and that's, you know, of course, without the federal estate tax having been decided, you know, I know we've talked about this before, and just so our audience knows, that means you guys as advisors are kind of playing two scenarios until the federal government gets this decision made, right?
That's right.
So it really makes for an interesting, you guys already have the most interesting, you know, jobs with your clients in terms of all sorts of different examples, but this just adds another little element to your piece as the advisor, which actually, as even as you're talking, I think we tend to think an annual review with a financial planner or maybe an annual review with an attorney, you know, if nothing has truly changed. But again, when I've talked with Pam Ricker, and we'll be talking with her more and connecting you guys in future episodes as well, you know, having a consistent quarterly review with your CPA, she can probably see some triggers or stay on top of some changes in the laws that affect tax. She can advise then, you need to talk to Jeff, and then you need to talk to Todd, or let's make sure we get the three of us in a room and have a conversation. So that's where that partnership of advisors is also extremely important during the life of the business.
Yep.
I would agree.
Go ahead, Todd.
Say the oftentimes what I say to someone is as long as you're working with an advisor in one of these key roles, whether it's the attorney, the financial planner, the CPA, as long as you're working with someone who has a grasp, not an expert, obviously. I'm not an attorney and I'm not a CPA, but I understand enough of how those components fit into the big picture, and I pay enough attention to what's changing and what's going on, and I talk to Jeff and I talk to Pam or, you know, other professionals often enough that hopefully I'm able to identify this is the time where you need to go talk to that person. I think ideally it would be a good idea to have regular contact with all of your advisors, but at the very least get to a point where you're regularly updating things with one or two of those key people so that they can help you catch some of those issues that are going to come up.
And I would just expand on that, and not only be in regular contact with your advisors, but if they don't know each other, introduce your advisors to each other, because, you know, as we've talked about today, you know, these elements all interweave. You know, things that I'm doing interweave with what Todd's doing, and, you know, your CPA, your financial advisor, your attorney, your coach, whatever it is, everybody needs to be on the same page. And I just had, just a couple weeks ago, a new client, and I asked them they already had an existing CPA. I asked them who it was. It was not somebody I knew. She introduced us by email. We're getting together. So, you know, you got to have those. You got to be in contact so we don't operate as islands. We're all parts of a machine. And so I tend to like to know who my other client, my client's other advisors are, so I can get to know them, and so we can do what's best for in our client's interest.
And I'm so glad you said that, Jeff, because at the end of the day, the value proposition that we hope to bring here at Next Stage Business Radio Network, specifically with the Advisor Show, is to provide examples and real-world experience of our advisors so that our business owners listening can realize we can't put our advisors in a bucket. I know I've joked with you guys that it seems what I've always heard from every advisor I've interviewed is you know, what is one thing that you wish your clients, would have done or should have done? And I wish they would have come to us sooner. I hear that so much. So I'm so grateful that I have advisors that understand we need to stay connected and work with each other. And it's not about just staying connected within the team, but if there is already an advisor, like you're saying, Jeff, on the team for the business owner, we still need to know who that is. We still need, so that you can have the legal discussion with the CPA. So that's why we do what we do. So we are in the end here. We're starting to wrap up our conversation. You know, it's so funny. We think an hour is a long time on the radio, but in essence, it goes by so, so fast. So before we wrap up, Todd, would you just provide, is there just kind of a last little tip or suggestion or anything, you know, that we haven't covered that you want to make sure is addressed today in terms of the financial planning area of exiting your business or putting that strategy together?
I guess I would say, to make it as simple as possible, that it doesn't take a huge amount of money and it doesn't take a lot of time to just sit down, whether it's with your attorney or your financial advisor or some kind of a business coach, and start to verbalize what your plans are with the business and make sure that as you're thinking this through and you think ahead, obviously things will change, but that as long as you're having some kind of dialogue with one of your key advisors, hopefully all of them, and as Jeff mentioned, hopefully they're connected in some way, that you're at least thinking it out, thinking it through, putting it on paper maybe. You know, we try to encourage all of our clients to do some kind of business plan, as Jeff mentioned. Not all micro businesses have business plans.
Right.
What do I need a business plan for? It's just me and my staff person, and I'm just going to try to make as much money as I can. That's not really a business plan. So if you can verbalize that and at least get those people involved to a minimal extent, they will help you make sure you're covering what you need to cover, the CYA factor. And so
excellent.
I think in the grand scheme of things, that's the one takeaway that I would encourage anyone to be thinking about.
Jeff, from your perspective, from a legal perspective, any other last suggestion or tip that we didn't cover today that you want to make sure that we keep at top of mind in this process?
I don't think so. I think the only thing I would stress is before a business owner goes down a path creating their own succession plan, to have those conversations with their advisors, because I always tell people, my clients, especially when it comes to purchasing and selling businesses, you know, that's part of what I do for a living. They may do it one time in their life. I'll do it several times in a year.
Right.
So come, you know, and Todd's seen several of them too, and our, you know, your CPA has seen them. So come to us up front. We probably know a little something about how to do it the best way. So talk to us first before you go putting things in writing, before you start negotiating too hard, to make sure that you're on the right path.
Well, and that goes back to our discussion where it's cheaper to hire you guys into the process sooner rather than later, right? And that's in both of you, because sometimes we're making more money because we met with you, Todd, or we've gone to an investment that makes a little more sense for our particular situation. So, I mean, I really hope that our audience is connecting some of those dots today. And so as we wrap up the show, Jeff, why don't you tell the audience, how could we connect with you if we wanted to have a one-on-one conversation with you as a business attorney?
Well, I'll give you the firm website as well as my own website. It's probably the best way to get a hold of me. Firm website is mansfieldtanik.com. That's www.mansfieldtanik.com. And then my own site, where I've got some different articles and blog posts and what it links to everything me online, is www.jeffreyobrienesq.com. So either of those sites, there's contact information there. You can connect with me at email, phone, Facebook, Twitter, Skype, whatever it is. I'll return the inquiry.
Yes, we can find you. If we have an internet access, we should be able to connect with Jeff. That's for darn sure.
It's hard for me to hide.
And, of course, our financial planner and financial advisor over there at Diversified Wealth Management, Todd Terhorst, how can we connect with you if something you said really connected with us and we want to learn more?
Probably the same way. I would say the website, diversifiedwealthmanagement.com. There's a easy access to connect. You can drop an email directly from there, or, of course, my phone number. Or drop me an email directly, and the email address is just Todd, T-O-D-D, at diversifiedwealthmanagement.com. So be happy to at least, you know, immediately answer any urgent issues or find the time to chat with someone at any point.
And, of course, even though this these guys are both based in Minnesota and there are some certain regulations in terms of them working in other states, I think what's important here is if you are not in Minnesota but you're listening is that you got some great information and they can more than likely direct you to someone, if not them, someone else that could also assist you as well. So I just wanted to put that out there for our national audience because we are on an internet radio station, which is a very exciting move here for the Next Stage Business Radio Network. And also, if you really didn't get a chance to write all that down, don't worry. Just go to nextstagebusinessradio.com and go to the advisor show, and you will see Todd's picture, Jeff's picture, and all of their contact information and ways to connect with them. So I want to thank you guys so much for taking time out of your busy Friday to be live with us today on the radio network. Thank you so much, Todd. It's been a pleasure, and we're so excited to have you kick off your tenure with the advisor show here at the network.
Thank you, Pamela. Good show.
Excellent.
I
and,
agree.
Of course,
that's
fun. Yeah, always fun chatting with you. You give us that nice legal perspective. So thanks for being with us today again.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again, Pamela.
All right. Well, you guys enjoy the rest of your day. And coming up next week on The Advisors, that CPA advisor that we've been talking about, Pam Ricker, she was on last week. Well, she's coming back on next week. She is, of course, the president and chief CPA over at Ricker & Associates. But she's coming on with one of her strategic advisor partners that we really need to be talking about every so often in our business, and that is Stephanie Lytle with Owl Bookkeeping and CFO. Stephanie's company is a chief financial officer outsourcing company, and those two work very well together to make sure that your I's are dotted, T's crossed, and your financial records connect with the tax laws. So be sure to tune in next week for that show of the advisors. Again, thanks to Todd. Thanks to Jeff. Thanks so much to our listeners and those out there in the internet world that are archiving and listening to us. Again, it's nextstagebusinessradio.com. Check us out on Facebook, Twitter. We also have that iTunes channel, so put us in your podcasts as well. In the meantime, have a great Friday, and as always, make it a great week.
This has been a presentation of the Next Stage Business Radio Network.